Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla Mudin's our medical nutritionist, and she's helping me field questions from you. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Please keep sending them. We've got some great ones this week. And what's next, Layla?
We have an email from Steve. And Steve is somebody who emailed us a while back saying that he was having an allergic reaction when he took colostrum. And your response, Dr. Hoffman, was the following. The slight allergic reaction to colostrum is in all likelihood due to the milk proteins crossing the leaky slash permeable gut lining into the bloodstream, where the immune system is recognizing it as a foreign material. So the ideal solution would be to decrease the amount of colostrum to, say, half a teaspoon, where the symptoms wouldn't appear, or at least that you'd be able to tolerate. And with consistent use, you should be able to, the gut lining would be able to heal, because colostrum is good for healing the gut lining as well.
Mm-hmm. So
month or so, the symptoms should go away. Well, Steve is writing back.
Yeah.
He's saying, I told you that I would update you on the use of colostrum and allergic reaction.
Yeah, let's hear the follow-up.
Yeah. Steve says, I don't use colostrum as much as I was because the allergic reaction is too irritating, and I'm not so sure that it's due to a leaky gut, because when I use arginine, I get the same reaction. He gets the same thing with arginine. There are many other things that kill pathogens that don't give that reaction, so I plan to use those things more, but I'm not planning to use the colostrum as much, and this is my unprofessional opinion, confesses Steve.
Okay. Frankly, colostrum is a milk-derived product. So if you have anaphylaxis to milk, you probably should stay away from colostrum. I mean, anaphylaxis would be a life-threatening reaction. So you can't get around that, I think, by taking less, because even minute amounts of it could, you know, create a devastating reaction. But for ordinary people who, say, have multiple food allergies, colostrum is generally good because along the lines of it does address leaky gut. It helps to seal the tight junctions, which are leaky, and therefore can be beneficial. So there you have it.
There you go. Okay. It appears Steve has allergic reaction to many things if he's getting the same reaction with arginine.
Not sure what that's about.
Yeah. Now, that deserves a closer look, Steve, if you want to get in touch, really, for a consult or something like that. That deserves a closer look. But best of luck to you in taking these supplements.
Yeah.
All right. We have an email from Deborah. Deborah writes, I enjoy and learn from your radio show and podcast each week. Thank you for all the good info. I have had alpha-gal red meat allergy for almost three years. So any headlines I see about this catches my attention. I read some research recently from the University of Virginia suggesting there may be an increased risk of atherosclerosis for people who have the sensitivity, even though they have no outright symptoms. I'm 74. I'm in good health, no heart disease, no diabetes. What are your thoughts on this study and any implications for folks with this allergic reaction?
Well, my first thought is that AlphaGal is a great Twitter handle.
Isn't it?
Hi, I'm AlphaGal. At AlphaGal. Okay, so, yeah. But all kidding aside, what AlphaGal is, it's a sensitivity to galactose alpha-1-3 galactose, which is abbreviated AlphaGal. Mm-hmm. It's an allergen that's found in red meat, and yeah. It's in all mammalian meat. So it's not in poultry. It's not in eggs. It's not in fish. But all so you would have a cross-reactive to lamb, pork, veal, beef.
Whale.
Whale. Yeah, exactly.
Whale.
Deer, you know, venison.
Yeah.
Elk.
Uh-huh.
You know, squirrel.
Yeah.
Right?
Eustace, I want some squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah, and it creates, it's a really strange thing because it's a tick-borne illness. It's acquired from a tick bite. And it's a very...
And that's what causes the allergy, correct?
Is that... Yes. That's what causes yes. And however, you know, when I wasn't aware of this, so I had to look it up, you know, do a little show prep, which I think we owe our audience, is not to just take these questions cold, because if presented with this cold, I would have said, really, do tell, I'll have to look into this. But actually, mm-hmm. there is such a study, and it is from the UVA, University of Virginia. They say that this allergen is estimated to impact roughly 1% of the U.S. population, but it may affect as much as 20% of the population in certain areas, especially where the Lone Star tick is prevalent, which, by the way, is a different tick. It's not the deer tick. The Lone Star tick is a big tick. It's like a dog tick. It's like you can see it. It's the size of a nail head. So it's actually not like a tiny pinhead. It's a nail head. And it's got a kind of a star pattern on the back of it. And typically dogs carry it. But it's intriguing because it suggests that there may be yet another cardiovascular risk factor. And it fits nicely with the possibility that some people should avoid red meat. Because, not because of the cholesterol or the saturated fat, but because of the immune activation that this allergy to AlphaGal causes that may affect the arteries. It's very intriguing, I think. And, you know, I guess we could begin, you know, we could check for cholesterol, triglycerides, homocysteine, lipoprotein A, Lp(a), and on and on and on. Do LDL fractionation and look at C-reactive protein and maybe, just maybe, test these people for AlphaGal. You know, so it's interesting. So here's what happened. They looked at 118 subjects who presented for cardiac catheterization. And IgE for AlphaGal was identified 26% of these patients.
Wow.
Plaque buildup
was significant.
Yeah. Plaque buildup was 30% higher in the patients sensitized to AlphaGal compared to those who were not. Okay. 30% is, it doesn't mean that you can't have plaque without AlphaGal, but 30% higher, that's pretty much, and these plaques tend to be less structurally stable, thus being more likely to break off and cause a heart attack or stroke. So that's a very, very interesting study and it has not gotten a lot of play. But it was in a big journal, Atherosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. And wow, that's a real revelation, you know.
That's really something.
So, you know, I guess, you know, what would we do with this information? Maybe we would just say, look at some people and say, gee, you know, we can understand why you have cardiovascular disease. You know, you're thin, you're active, you have very good blood sugar, and you have great cholesterol, and you don't have a strong family history of heart disease, you never smoked. And so why would you, when we discover they have plaque or they have, you know, they've had a heart attack or, you know, maybe they've needed a stent, well, maybe we should dig a little deeper and say maybe a missing unknown risk factor is the AlphaGal risk factor, in which case we really would say, avoid red meat. You know, so all comes back to your American Myocardial Association. Maybe they're right after all, because
yeah,
we challenge that general recommendation, you know, because we think that that, you know, red meat is not the end all and be all of cardiovascular risk. But in this case, it might be for some a certain percent of the population.
So that is fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really interesting stuff. We'll have to follow that story, because again, one of these, it's just the beginning of our, this is a landmark article. And so we have to see if over time this article is replicated and if further studies shed light on this, or whether it just becomes kind of a footnote to history that just eventually, becomes discredited. You know what I'm saying? Some of these things sometimes are a flash in the pan. So we'll have to see where this one goes. I'll keep following it for our audience.
Yeah.
Good time to pause, because we allow our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you. So here goes. Please listen up. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's next, Layla?
We have an email from Stuart. Stuart says, I'm a 71-year young man in excellent condition, 5'10", 155 pounds. How do I reduce my LDL? I don't eat much sugar. Any general ideas? And Dr. Hoffman, he gave us some numbers.
Yeah.
His HDL, his high-density lipoprotein, is 63.
Mm-hmm.
His triglycerides are 55.
Which is good.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful right there.
Mm-hmm.
His LDL is 173.
Mm-hmm.
And he's concerned about his high LDL and how to reduce it.
Right. So the first thing I would say is maybe you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying you don't, but I'm just saying maybe you don't. And the way to ascertain that is go for an EBT heart scan and see if you have the beginnings of calcification.
Yeah.
If you don't, then you're, by virtue of other good things you have and, you know, lifestyle factors and also good numbers, protected from cardiovascular disease. We don't know why some people with astronomically high cholesterol, and this is more the case with women, but good HDL, still don't have any plaque or have minimal plaque.
Yeah. Yeah. When I see that the HDL number is higher than the triglycerides, as in the case of Stuart, Stuart's HDL is 63, mm-hmm. his triglycerides are 55. That's a gorgeous lipid profile right there.
That's a sign of metabolic health.
Even before we address the LDL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a metabolically sound ratio.
Triglycerides in and of itself are problematic, and he has very little. So he's eating the right way. That's testament. That's testimony that he is eating not much in the way of sugar at all. Otherwise, his triglycerides would be much higher.
So, again, we challenge the primacy of LDL for determining cardiovascular risk. There's a nice, Twitter handle called LDL Skeptic, and we interviewed that doctor on the subject of LDL skepticism, basically saying that, you know, LDL should not in and of itself be the determinant of cardiovascular risk. And find out if you have plaque, and then we'll address
find
it.
Because
a simple answer to this question is not how you should reduce your LDL. It's like, should you reduce your LDL? If it comes to, you know, that you have risk, then maybe we should undertake some cholesterol lowering with things like bergamot, red yeast rice, even a statin, you know, if necessary.
I would first have Stuart ask his doctor for homocysteine, lipoprotein little a, high-sensitive C-reactive protein, all of those suspects, which really have been understated all these years and still are to some degree. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, as part of a comprehensive workup, I mean, this sounds like a fairly typical appointment in the office for us, is somebody who comes in with precisely this type of question. Now, what happens when you are a 71-year-old male and you have an LDL of 170, whatever, you come under enormous pressure to go on a statin drug. Generally, that is de rigueur by conventional medical standards. So typically we'll get patients who are told, you know, you've got to go on a statin, you know, you're virtually certain to get cardiovascular disease. And that's, you know, that's between, you know, you and God and nature, whether you're going to get cardiovascular disease. I think a physician cannot, just on the basis of your LDL, give you some sort of threatening prognosis and, you tell you that statins are going to be your savior on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, Stuart, explore all of that. Yeah. Before you get very concerned about your LDL. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It may not be a problem. You know, I'd love to solve problems by saying, so maybe it's not a problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what you present as a problem, you know, like this, you know, your whatever, you know, people will say, oh, you know, I have a high, whatever, some parameter that, you know, is inconsequential. And we'll say, well, maybe that's just not a problem. So, you know, let's say, how do I fix this? And maybe you don't have to fix it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Just that mainstream medicine calls it a problem, therefore.
Yeah.
Thank you, Stuart, for this question. Keep yourself well. All right. We have an email from Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Last week, you had a podcast on hyaluronic acid, and I'm wondering if there are any interactions with Coumadin.
There should not be. There should not be.
There should not. I mean, hyaluronic acid is something to apply topically more often than not, right?
No, hyaluronic acid taken internally. It
can
be taken.
Okay.
The product in question is HA7. It also contains some boswellan, which is not going to be a problem with Coumadin. It doesn't have vitamin K in it. It's got some phytic acid in it, which is for iron control. And none of the ingredients in there are likely to either interfere with the action of Coumadin or potentiate it. So it should be perfectly fine to take with Coumadin. And, you know, I think it'll be okay. I mean, the nice thing about Coumadin is if you're taking something new and it affects your bleeding time, it'll pop up in a test because patients on Coumadin every few weeks have to get their ProTime measured anyway. So, you know, you can confirm its lack of impact easily with a blood test that your doctor will insist you do anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Judy, we hope that answers that for you.
Yep.
Okay. We have a very interesting question here about thyroid. This is from Tim. I was wondering if you could comment on this. On a blood test, my thyroglobulin antibody is less than 0.9, and the normal range would be 0 up to 4.
Mm-hmm.
Seems low. But what are your thoughts from a nutritional perspective?
Okay, well,
any suggestions?
So just quick answer is, if it's less than 0.9, then it's negative.
Then it's negative.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah.
Are we talking about thyroglobulin antibodies?
Yeah, thyroglobulin antibodies is what Tim is asking about. And what he's asking is, if low doesn't seem to be immune system, or am I wrong?
No,
underweight, maybe by 10 pounds.
No. He's overreading.
I think he's concerned about his weight.
He's overreading. What it means is that it's not detectable, so he has no discernible thyroid autoimmunity. Now, if he's underweight, the test that might be too low that would indicate hyperthyroidism, because patients who have hypothyroidism are often overweight, and patients who have hyperthyroidism, overactive thyroid, tend to be underweight. That would be the TSH. And the TSH, if it's very low, suggests hyperthyroidism. But he's not talking about the TSH. He's talking about the thyroglobulin. So
thyroglobulin antibodies, yes.
Yeah, so too low. I mean, it's like, you know, it's not abnormal. It's actually normal. That's a normal finding. I mean, a lot of people have traces of thyroglobulin. They're not in serious trouble, but they might be on their way to thyroid problems.
Tim had actually another question. You had a caller on Saturday who expressed her appreciation for your recommendation of a certain alternative medicine program that she enrolled in and now is pursuing a profession in that field. He didn't catch the name of the school that you had recommended. Does that jog your memory at all, Dr. Hoffman?
No, not really. But, you know, there are alternative medicine programs. I mean, if it's in the New York
Vassar University comes to mind.
Yeah, that's on the West Coast. That's in Seattle. And then there's the National School of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland. But for if you want to become a naturopath, there is a school in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Bridgeport, Connecticut, yes.
Courses in nutrition. They have a nutrition program in Bridgeport. And I think it's a good program. Some of the mail order programs I'm not that enamored of, but some people don't want to go that ND route. It's very rigorous, time consuming, expensive. They just want to become health coaches. And I think you could do worse than going to Bridgeport. So that's probably, I don't recall specifically that recommendation, but that's what I would say off the top of my head now. Dr. David Brady, who's been a frequent guest on the program, presides over that program. He's a very, credible guy. He's a chiropractor, naturopath, but he's also quite brilliant. And he, has really, helped to develop a very credible program there. I mean, 15 years ago, maybe it wasn't as rigorous, but I think that program's really coming along in terms of its, rigor and scientific, bona fides.
Okay. Tim, thank you for your questions.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today's Intelligent Medicine podcast.
Ah, time flies when you're having fun.
Exactly.
I didn't even feel that go by, honestly. Wow.
Yeah, it certainly, I agree. So a reminder, you can send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. We'd love to get your questions. Alternatively, you can go to our website at drhoffman.com and using your PC or Mac. It's not yet enabled for your mobile, for your iPad or for your phone, but on a PC or Mac, there's a little pop-up on the homepage that'll prompt you to record a question, and then you can simply record a question. That question will be forwarded to me, and then I'll repeat that question on our weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. You'll go live on the air, and I'll answer that question on our weekly radio program. But this is a great forum for getting your questions answered, radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll read your question on the air, answer it to the best of our ability.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.